Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Rich Report. You are now about to experience a close encounter of the indigenous kind. So open your mind, tune in, and let's dialogue. It happens now.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Rich Report, sponsored by African American Vain African, and broadcast live on Blog Talk Radio. It's stereo, baby. You know what? Like Tony, it feels good to be back on the air, chatted up with you beautiful, intelligent, innovative, and soulful-ass engines. You know, we had a really, really good show last week, and hopefully we cleared the air about a few things about 4A and where we stand on certain issues and with certain people. But that was last week, folks. That was last week. This week, we're moving on. So that means tonight, I'll refrain from making innuendos about anybody's badly permed beard and how so-and-so sounds like DMX with a really bad drinking problem. That will not happen tonight. I guarantee you I will not mention any of those things. So, no, we're not going to do it. I won't do it. I promise you I will not mention beards or drinking problems in DMX. So, we're going to move full steam ahead. And tonight, that means we're going to go back to the future and discuss history. And by history, I mean real history, not his story. Tonight, my special guest will be none other than the Medicine Man, Reggie Parkinson, and he will break down his Claim of Thrones video for you guys, which is an awesome, awesome video. That's, you know, it's just awesome. I hope all of you have gotten the chance to check that video out. But he's going to break it down for those of you who didn't. And maybe after breaking it down, you'll go and check it out. And you'll get the gist of everything that we'll talk about tonight. But, and we got a lot to cover, because that video is over 2 hours long, or about 2 hours or so. So we're going to get into it, because it's going to take a minute. And I hope you guys call in after the fact or during. Remember the number, 563-999-3442. Call in number, press 1. To join the conversation. But before we get to that, we're going to hit the mailbag. Yep, I'm bringing the mailbag back by popular demand, mainly my popular demand. But in saying that, I also, because I still get a lot of inboxes and emails from you beautiful, happy-ass Indians, as well as trolls, spooks, sambos, and crackers, both conservative and liberal. Can't leave them out. So, without further delay, let's get it on, shall we? Come on, let's go over to the mailbag and make it happen, Captain. You know I love this part. All right, here we go. And remember now, I take these as they come. So a lot of the times when I get these, I'm just as surprised as you are. All right, so this first one comes from Chase. Who writes, Gabriel, I saw where you were disrespectful to the people discussing the Civil War by calling it a red herring. I believe you owe us an apology. If you knew what our Confederate ancestors went through to give your people freedom, you'd keep your mouth shut. All right, with a name like Chase, 9 times out of 10, you ain't no engine. Then again, these days, you could be, because there are a lot of tailors and tilers out there who are engines. So you could be, Chase. But since you said your people, I'm assuming that you're of the Caucasian persuasion. I think I know what group you're talking about, Chase. I think that's the group where I'd use my first name, but I don't use my real identity in terms of my face. And, well, basically, I'm trolling your group, Chase. Okay. It is a red herring. The Civil War is a red herring, Chase. And if you read anything I said in there, I think you got pissed off about me saying that history was in reverse about the Civil War. It is in reverse about the Civil War. We were not out in those fields with the woe is me thing going on. You were, Chase. And 9 times out of 10, if you are a Confederate, if your family fought in the Confederate, in the Civil War as Confederates, You were doing that shit to escape slavery, Chase. Your ancestors were trying to get out of slavery or make things better for themselves than they already were, or they were already being treated much better than a lot of the people were in the North, and they were trying to protect their little bit of interest that they had. It is what it is with it. Hey, don't get mad at me. Don't shoot the messenger. I'm not going to get in depth about it because, well, that's for another show, actually. I was going to do a show about the Civil War, so I'm not going to get in depth with you, Chase, but I would suggest that you actually stop reading those textbooks of the McGraw-Hill variety and read some real history. If you do, you'll find out the Civil War had nothing to do with slavery, Chase. The North had slaves. Maryland was considered a northern state. It had slaves. So, please. And by slaves, I don't mean the chattel slave variety where they lived on Master's plantation, not in 1860. You know how rare that was? You know how many white folks actually could afford plantations? Not very many, Chase. Not very many. That whole, you know, Missouri candy deal from like Django, that's more fallacy than reality. And the majority of people who did own plantations, Chase, they look like my people, not your people. The majority of people out in the field with sad looks on their faces, the majority of them were your people, not my people. And that's all I'm going to say about that, Chase. I could tell you to go fuck yourself, but it wouldn't be worth my time. All right. That was fun, wasn't it, guys? Well, I certainly enjoyed that. It sure is good to be back. All right. This next one comes from Black. What's up, Black? Right on, bro. Who writes? Gabriel. Antonio Brown. What's up with him? Well, that was a whole lot you just said, Black. My brother. What's up with Antonio Brown? He's bugging the fuck out. That's really what's up with him. I can't tell you any more than that. He's the cat who he doesn't get it. I'm not really going to go in depth. Just check his moves. Antonio doesn't get it. He's got a lot of people around him who are enabling him. And a lot of people want to say it's mental problems, but it is. But the mental problem is one of immaturity. He hasn't grown up. You give an immature, egotistical person a lot of money, and they will predictably act like Antonio Brown acts, especially in this day and age of social media, where he has a large following and he caters to social media more than he actually deals with people. You see his, you check his history. His history is he's got a history of stiffing people who work for him. He's got a history of being emotionally, at the very least, abusive to women. I don't know about the rape allegations. I can't speak on any of that stuff, but in certain circles, being, you know, cats that I know in the sports writer world in general, in the sports world, he's really, really abusive to women, particularly sisters, which is why he's gotten away with it for so long. Now, I will say this, Black, he's no different than Ben Roethlisberger, who is a serial rapist, allegedly, and was doing a lot of the same things. Giving an egotistical, immature guy some money and him just losing his mind. There are restaurants right now that Roethlisberger can't walk into because, well, in the past, he would go into these restaurants. He's the king of Pittsburgh because having won the Super Bowl and then winning another Super Bowl, although the first one he had very little to do with, and, you know, walking in with a large entourage of 10, 20 people, and we're talking expensive restaurants. We're not talking about him walking in your local Arby's and running up a depressive tab only to walk out and stiff the people. So it's no different. The difference is Antonio Brown displays all of his stuff over on the media. As what you can see today, well, he's throwing his furniture out of the 14th floor of his apartment in Miami. All right, the 14th floor of a $35,000 a month apartment. He's throwing furniture out, could have possibly injured people. The whole nine. He's just immature. He's a child, and he doesn't get it. And if he doesn't wake up soon, he's going to be out of money. Because this is, where else is he going to earn $10 million a year? I mean, think about it this way. This man had a $30 million guaranteed contract with the Raiders. All he had to do was play, go to practice, show up at the mandatory meetings, and he couldn't do that. He used every excuse he could to get out of, and he didn't plan trying to get out with the Raiders. He didn't plan that. That's just some shit that he brained up at the last moment. Okay, so you go to the Patriots, and you know how the Patriots get down. You got to live the Patriot way. No one is exempt from that, not even Tom Brady, believe it or not. He does what the Patriot thing, too, or now they'll work harder to protect Tom, don't get me wrong, of course, but he still abides by it. So if you're a so-called best player abides by the rules, what makes you think Antonio Brown isn't going to abide by the rules? And what makes you think that if he doesn't abide by the rules, they won't get rid of him? Well, he didn't abide by the rules. They asked him not to make any responses whatsoever towards the allegations or the people alleging, you know, sexual harassment against him and or rape, and he went right out and did it anyway. $5 million he thinks they owe him, but they cut him before Monday, the deadline to pay him $5 million. They don't owe him anything, technically speaking. So, and he's got lawsuits from the people now. He's getting a lawsuit from the people who own the condo where he was throwing the furniture out. So he's got problems in more ways than one, and he bought it on himself. I don't feel sorry for him. I mean, you know, so at some point in time, we got to realize that everybody can't act like, we can't act like white folks and think that you're going to get away with it. Johnny Manziel acted a fool the entire time he was in college and in the pro. It took, they gave him at least three chances. Antonio Brown won't get three chances, and he's a far superior player, arguably the best receiver over the last five seasons than everyone else is. I mean, the cat can play well, but hey, you know, you shouldn't take it off the field. What you do on the field is one thing, but if you can't handle your shit off the field, and when you start pandering to people that you don't know just because you have following millions, that's a problem. You see it with Beckham, same deal, but it's not quite nearly as bad, thank goodness. But that's what it is with him, Black. He's stupid. He's immature and he's stupid. And if he doesn't straighten up and fly right at some point in time, in a few years, he'll be broke. So hope not for his sake. Don't want to see any engine making that type of money broke. But you know what? Hey, it ain't like he's doing anything for anybody other than himself anyway. So, it is what it is, bro. All right. This last one comes from Tisha Campbell. I just had to add that. Who writes, Gabriel, I'm not understanding what you're saying about hip-hop. It seems you hate a music and culture that's been positive for Black people. And although I admit it's not what it once was, then how will karma not affect it if that's the case? Ooh, well, Tisha, I don't understand what you're saying about hip-hop either. It hasn't necessarily been positive, and Black has no standing in law. So it hasn't been positive for Negro Amerindians. It has not been positive for us for over 30 years. It hasn't been positive. And even a lot of the cats who are considered positive, if you go back and break their lyrics down, they're not positive either. You can't, you know, shout out to my niggas and bitches and you're positive. What? So, basically, I get that a lot of you were raised on it now, and so therefore you will defend it tooth and nail. I get that. See, for me, it was a different thing altogether, Tisha. I was 13 when Rapper's Delight came out. I was already too deeply immersed in other genres of music. And for me, the golden age of hip-hop is not the 90s. The golden age of hip-hop ended in the 90s, mid-90s, really, if you want to take it there. But because the innovation died. And I don't hate hip-hop. I like it. As I told you before, I don't love it. I've never loved it. But I really do like it. And karma will not affect it because in the very beginning, what did hip-hop start doing in the 90s, Tisha? It said parental advisory. Remember those stickers? Parental advisories not to be listened to for kids under the age of blah, 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 blah. Well, they warned you. They warned you. It's like selling you crack with a parental advisory on the bag. Well, you see the parental advisory, how's karma going to come back to them? Karma's satisfied. You gave them a warning. They listened anyway. And another thing, hip-hop was not meant to be listened to by small kids. It was not. That's the mistake we made, that we showed no discretion. I'll give you a perfect example of what I'm talking about, Tisha. When I was a kid, We used to have, of course, you had Richard Pryor. We only didn't have Richard Pryor. You had Red Fox albums. Red Fox and his cohorts, Lucky Leroy, Slick Skillet, Esther, LaWanda Page, and they all would make these party albums together. They were triple X rated. Our parents didn't just openly let us listen to this stuff. Not at all. We had to sneak and listen to it. Or maybe we say if they were having a party, a house party, the kids are either outside in another room, you come in, you come out, and you get to hear a little bit of it, and, you know, it piques your interest. So then, of course, yeah, you snuck and listened to it. Or you listened to it over a friend's house when their parents weren't home because we sneaked and listening to it over there. But they didn't openly play this for us. Why? It was for adults. Adults can handle it. I, as a grown 20-something-year-old, I could handle what was there. It wasn't going to influence me at all. I wasn't going to come out of my way because I'd listened to a song that basically, you know, cast basically 18 tracks, 2 minutes long of bitches and hoes, and start calling women bitches and hoes. It was not going to happen for me. I was too old for that. For a kid, however, and I've seen this, yeah, it took an effect, a strong, strong polarizing effect on me. And a lot of that is the parents' fault because they didn't give a damn what their kids listened to. So, no, I'm not dogging hip-hop. I'm not dogging it at all. But I'll call it what it is. I'll call a spade a spade. And if you cats don't like it, you're going to have to deal with it. Seriously. I'm not going to get up here and big up hip-hop because it hasn't been positive. It hasn't been positive. And for you sisters to defend it when it has taken aim at you vexes me. I'm mystified by it. Do you understand that for the most part, in the last 20 years, the Caucasian man has gone out of his way to big up his women in movies and film and music? Meanwhile, and I'm not saying all of it, because obviously metal was out there, and metal, and that's why one of the reasons metal and hip-hop merged the way that it did, because of that very, very reason. Very negative as fuck. Just calling it what it is. But overall, they've gone out of their way to big up their women. Even though they don't really like their women, they understand that this is something that they have to do. Hip-hop has denigrated you at every turn. For every one positive song about sisters, I can give you 25 negative songs for each one song. Actually, I can give you more than that. I'm just being conservative in that estimate. Think about it. So, no, I don't hate hip-hop. I listen to it now. I listen to a lot of it now still. But I'm a grown-ass man. I would never, when my daughter was a child, a toddler stage, she didn't listen to what I listened to. Not in hip-hop, no. Because I understood the parental advisory. You dig? Now, when she got older, she can listen to what she wants to listen to. She's 29 now. She can listen to what she wants to listen to. And I'm not suggesting that she didn't listen to it over her friend's house or whatever. But she knew she couldn't come back at the table and, you know, start wilding out with some crazy ass lyrics at the table. That wasn't going to happen. Neither me or her mom, that wasn't going to happen. That wasn't acceptable. And a lot of you didn't get your kids in line. You just let them listen to what they wanted to listen to. And then, of course, they started dressing however they wanted to dress, which is why that's how sagging got accepted. Because you started letting them dress the part of what they were listening to. So now you got a bunch of cats out here looking like gay pirates. And mama think it's cute. Dad think it's cute, too. And you got some dads out here who are even scared of their children to say anything, even though they buying the clothes. They scared of him. That's the way he wanted to dress up. I don't know why he dressed like that. You know the fuck why he dresses that way. You let him dress that way. He's 13. Thank goodness I don't have a son. Because y'all be calling him a nerd, square, this and that. And I'm not saying he wouldn't dress jiggy now, because I did. And he would too. But if my son came through the door and his pants with a belt on is below his ass, all right, and he's thinking that he can do whatever he wants to do, say whatever he wants to say, and when I tell him to pull his pants up and he look at me and just blow me off, I'm probably not going to have a son anymore, or my son's going to be in traction. It's going to be one of the two. So thank goodness I had a daughter. I didn't have to go through that with a daughter. Thank goodness. And, you know, I'm a daddy's, I'm a daughter's dad anyway. really. So that's probably a good thing. I mean, you know, it is what it is, but I'm just saying, Tisha, I don't get how you guys defend something that puts you down. It's almost like a pimp hole mentality that a lot of you sisters have when it comes to hip hop. Yeah, you can like something, but that doesn't mean that you don't call it out for what it is. There's a lot. I like Dr. John Henry Clark. So was he a Jew loving brother if there ever was one? Yes, he was. I'm not gonna give him any breaks for that. I'm not gonna give him any breaks for giving us misinformation. Although I liked his oratory style and the way he said what he said. It is what it is. That doesn't mean that I have to hate him. I don't. It doesn't necessarily mean that I won't call his ass out for the shit he did. I will. It's that simple. And with that, the mailbag is officially wrapped up until the next time, y'all. Wasn't that fun? You know, I didn't have to tell anybody to go F and say, okay, I did, you know, kind of sort it in a roundabout way. But, you know, sometimes things happen. All right. Now, with that said, let us, with no further delay, bring on the medicine man himself, Reggie Parkinson, and let's talk Claim of Thrones, baby. Da-da-da-da, I forgot the music. Okay, anyway, here we go. Medicine Man, what's going on, Engine Chief?
Hey, what's happening?
I can't call it, man. I can't call it. I'm as happy as an engine clam, basically soaking in booze right now for you to be on the show.
Oh, man, it's a pleasure to be on. Long time overdue.
Yeah, I have to see. The last time you were on the show was 2017, and a lot has changed since that time period.
Yes, sir.
Yes, it has, man. Your Children of the Corn videos and this last Claim of Thrones. Of course, I watch all of your videos. They're very informative. But you've been really just knocking it out the park, man. I mean, you know, if you were a quarterback right now, you'd be that throwing mulatto Patrick Mahomes, bro. You are just hitting the open man in double coverage with these videos, man. So what? Let me ask you, what prompted you to create Claim of Thrones?
Well, first let me foremost say all praises to the Most High, the Creator of Creators, the Frame and the Shape of All, and greetings to all. What prompted me to do Game of Thrones was actually me watching the series.
And, yeah,
it's like it was a big, you know, big to do about it. I mean, I didn't check it out or anything, but as it was entering the end of it, because I wasn't an avid watcher when it first, you know, the first few seasons. Actually, I just caught it in the last season when I heard it was going out. So
right.
I'm like, okay, well, what's the big deal about Game of Thrones? You know, and I'm thinking it was going to be something like The Hobbit or, you know, one of these other productions. But as I start watching it, I'm like, wait a minute. This is inaccurate. You know, it's like a lot of the stuff that they are depicting in here, this is not how it was. And, you know, it's basically, I don't know if it was, you know, just my need to get the truth out, to correct, you know, some of the misinformation that was given and the propaganda that they were spreading. But it just spirit came over me and said, hey, research this and get, you know, some of the truth to the people so that they can differentiate what they're seeing on the screen and what were the actual events. Now, keep in mind, a lot of these characters that they are portraying on this the series Game of Thrones, they're actually melanated. Of course, with their spin on things, they're going to make it their way.
Yes.
And so that's what really prompted me to go ahead and do my rendition of Game of Thrones as far as the historical aspect of it, to kind of
right.
correct some of the misinformation and some of the propaganda that they had spread. And in doing so, I learned a lot. You know, so
yeah.
it basically, anytime, and see, when I tell people, it's like, I'm just one of those people who is an avid researcher, an avid seeker of the truth. And it's like sometimes somebody might share something in a post or ask a question or, you know, and it'll spark something, you know. So I'm like, well, let me look into that. And so my way of going about it is you know, a lot of people like to look at what's modern and, you know, what's been written recently. I like to look at what's been written back, you know, during those times or around that era, you know, to get, you know, the more truthful and pertinent information that pertains to that subject. And in doing that, it opened up, you know, a can of worms, and basically speaking. So it's like, wow, when I was looking at just the makeup of the show, for instance, they, you know, of course, put it in a make-believe Westeros, Essos setting,
right,
which is
right,
actually England, you know, Europe,
yes,
actually. You know, so when you look at some of the historical renditions or the illustrations of the area, you will see how similar what the Game of Thrones puts out and what actually were. And I did one in one of my memes just to show, you know, the people that, hey, this is, you know, from satellite, and this is what they see and how the land was, and this is, you know, basically it's, you know, almost identical to the Game of Thrones Essos and Westeros settings. And
right,
so as I'm doing this research and getting some information on it, and I started digging and trying to figure out, like, okay, my first thought was, who were the original people that inhabited this land? That's what I needed to find out. That was my, basically, the root of it. And I can build from that, because we all know that over time, there's been a lot of conquests, a lot of usurping, a lot of migrations, bottlenecks, and whatnot. And some of this account is from climate, you know, changes, which,
yeah,
you know, occur, you know, pole shifts or whatnot. So, you know, I have to take all that into account. And what I stress to people is timelines. If you really want to know history, you got to know the timeline and what,
right,
was happening, who were the players during this time. And once you can ascertain that, it becomes a lot more obvious as to who you're dealing with or who were actual the people that should be depicted, and, you know, those who were in control. And when I started researching some of the history of the areas, the regions that these places in Game of Thrones, and then looking at some of the scenes and how they played out, a lot of the scenes or the storyline for this, should I say, is loosely based on true historical accounts, just that they're not depicting it in its proper context. You know, so that's what I tried to do when I started doing the research and putting together my video, The Game of Thrones. I basically did a spin on that and put it as Claim of Thrones, because that's really what it is. It's like,
yes,
a lot of these thrones, these kingdoms were usurped, and they were claimed. So that's basically, you know, the reason why I named it, you know, Claim of Thrones, just to, you know, put a spin on the series itself, and to also show you really what happened in the title.
Right.
Now, it wasn't, it was a game that they played, but it was also, and the end result of that game was to claim all of these thrones, which,
yes,
were at one point melanated.
All melanated. Because when you think of the houses, House Stark, House Baratheon, House, you know,
right,
Lannister, Targaryen. When you think of House Stark, for an example, that's in the north.
Exactly.
And that's in the north, and all the north lands that go along with it. So you're basically talking about northern Europe.
In
so,
essence,
you know,
now keep in mind, though, not to cut you off, but keep in mind now, when we say north, we got to understand what the true meaning of that word
north
is.
North is. Right. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So when you look at, you know, when you look at the etymology of the word north, it basically shows you the opposite of the meaning that we use today.
Exactly.
So we think north is up, but really north is down,
north
or
is
left,
down,
below.
Right.
In Sanskrit,
yep,
it means hell.
Yep.
So now it gives you a whole nother, you know, perspective when you're looking at it. So wait a minute. Okay. So all of this time, these people were in the north or Nord, you know, and I'm speaking of the Siberian or Hyperborean regions, and how that actually, if you flip the map like it should be, according to the definition of the word Nord, or Nord, then you will see that those areas were actually at the bottom of the map,
not the top. Yep.
Exactly. And, you know, they have Arabic maps, you know, a lot of ancient, well, I ain't going to say a lot, but a few ancient maps that I've come across, they even show it. They even show how the older maps were depicted before the European usurpation of the, well, should I say the Scavian slash Mongol Tatar slash Zetra Croat usurp of that region and how that came about. And when you're looking at the antiquities, for instance, you got tribes like I go, like I said, to older sources of information, say, like with Herodotus. Okay, well, Herodotus, he basically gave descriptions, you know, and he described their way of life, how they lived, what they looked like, you know, as well as other historians of in the era. And it's basically unanimous that those people were pale complexion. They varied in hair colors from blonde to red. You know, they had green, blue, gray eyes. And so when you think about it, you're like, well, who does this guy today? You see what I'm saying? Because keep in mind, this was basically their domain. And before the, should I say, invasions, the barbarian invasions.
Yeah.
And we talk again with timelines. So if you look at the timeline, say 500 B.C., well, according to the historical accounts, around that time is when these people that lived in the north region started migrating and moving around and basically seeking other areas to inhabit. And a lot of those came through usurp and conquest. And so now you got to ask your question, well, ask yourself, who were the people that was living there prior to these barbarians coming and taking it over? Then it goes into a whole nother volume, if you will, of people that is not spoken of much. And I have to make a differentiation because, you know, the term Moor goes around a lot. Oh, they Moor. Okay, well, when you do the etymology of the word Moor, then you understand that it's from the 14th century. So that's not ancient. So there can be, you know, the term that these people, you know, basically were going by in B.C. or before the coming of the Christian era.
Exactly.
So I started doing some research on it and come to find out that the tribes or the people that inhabited the northern region of what is now Europe, they were called M-O-H-R, Moor.
Right.
Which was a term that they were using for the swarthy people that lived in the fen. And the fen basically were the marshlands, the wetlands.
Right.
And that encompasses Wales, Scotland, England, all of those islands. All of that was the marshland. And so all those people, according to history, prior to the invasions of the barbarians, they were melanated people.
Exactly.
And anthropology shows you this. When they dug up the fossil remains, they have found so-called Negroid fossil remains in these regions that date over 40,000 years old. So when you understand what the timeline is, you know that that automatically eliminates, you know, it's like a process of elimination. So it eliminates certain people who claim it today, you know, and say, oh, you know, we've been here, we've always been here. We've been here forever. No, you haven't. History shows you when you came here. You know, if you know the timeline and you know the people who are playing. So that's basically, you know, what was the, you know, I guess the beginning stages of, you know, trying to put it all together. It's just trying to get an accurate timeline, information from those historians and scholars that what they wrote, what they documented, what was recorded from those times. And it gives you a bigger, clearer picture and better perspective.
True.
So. So I know you wanted me to, you know, do a little breakdown on the video. I mean, it's if you watch the video, I know you have.
I've seen it several times.
I'm speaking to those who may have not watched it. It's a lot of information, you know. So it's
a
like
a lot of information.
To break it down, I have to, you know, basically, hey, let's break it down and you ask me about this, ask me about that, you know, because I try to segue everything together, you know, and
right.
and you know, keep it flowing and keep, you know, keep your you know the watcher's interest, and you know,
which,
of course, go ahead.
Which is what I was going to do. I was going to ask you this because, okay, the beginning of the video, you discussed the Greeks. You discussed the Greeks. You discussed the Greeks, the Spartans, the you know, the Athenians. All of these guys you discussed. And
right.
I have the actual graphic novel.
Okay.
300. Yeah, I had that.
Oh, okay.
I had that. You know, when it came out some time ago.
Oh, okay.
And in that particular graphic novel, God, I can't think of his name now because I'm thinking about him. He's the same cat for all you comic book guys. He's the same guy who created the Dark Knight Batman series.
Yeah.
Also wrote the first two RoboCops and a few other things, okay? But I can't think of who he is right now because I'm thinking about it. But as soon as we get off the show, it'll pop in my head. But anyway, that's the first thing I noticed.
Right.
Is that he drew them as melanated people.
Exactly.
Now, when I was at in college at North Carolina Central, we had a white professor who was on cocaine pretty badly. You know, yeah. She was pretty coked out. You know, she'd come to class and she
right.
was like a rock sky. And because of that, she would give us information on who the Greeks really were.
Mm-hmm.
And she would say that, you know, no, people, she get, I mean, you know, he'd come saying to know that Zeus looked like a blonde haired, you know, she would get short with you. No. Zeus had kinky hair. And she would use the term that used to describe him as having swarthy features.
Right.
Swarthy color people.
Mm-hmm.
And she would do this. And then, of course, now by the end of that class, they sent her ass to a quick rehab and sobered up, and we never saw that information again. You dig? We never
wow.
saw information on ancient Europe or any of that stuff, because by that time, she either had to come to that class sober or lose her job. And her being
mm-hmm.
at an HBCU in the beginning with was her last shot before the junior college circuit, if you did what I'm saying. You know,
right.
Since she came from UMass, this was her last shot to stay at a four-year institution. So, but I, you know, we used to receive this information in bits and pieces. And
mm-hmm.
you're talking about the fact of Alexander the Great, who was also melanated, which, you know, I discovered
mm-hmm.
a few years ago, and how he had this situation with these people who, let's just say, from Gog and Magog. And this stuff is in the Bible, people. This stuff is in the Bible. It's biblical. Yeah, you don't take our word for it. It's there. Some people say Gog from Magog. Some people say Gog and Magog. And how Alexander had to deal with them. So could you explain that to the people, what he had to do with these people?
Well, actually, according to the historical accounts, and you can also get this information from the romances of Alexander the Great. He also puts it in that, and of course, it's also illustrated. Well,
right.
What happened was, you know, he was all, you basically, you know, one version is that he was trying to rid the earth of the seeds of the Nephilim, and
right.
this is coming from a woman of another persuasion. Basically, like you're saying, the teacher, she's telling the truth as well. And, you know, she's basically breaking it down. And I put her audio, and I accompanied it with, you know, some of the artwork from the Romances of Alexander the Great to show people what she was talking about and these people, you know, were depicted. But
right.
The account goes that he come across, as he was going through the regions of the Black Sea, the Caspian Sea, he come across some people who have basically complained to him about a tribe of people who were basically, you know, wicked in their ways, and they were, you know, basically dissipating the area, you know, sacrificing and whatever, you know, you can think of they were doing. And so they pleaded with Alexander to help us out. You know, we'll pay you. We, you know, whatever, you know, it takes, please help us out, oh, great king. And according to the accounts, Alexander, when he looked at, you know, the people they were talking about, he saw how vast they were. He's like, okay, well,
right.
I got an army, but it's going to take some work to go ahead and wipe them out. So let me just go ahead and do the second best thing, and that's just confine them, lock them away, or, you know, seal them off from civilization. So as the story goes, they were sealed behind, it was like a steel, copper, you know, gate that was made. You know, he had some of the people of the land go get all of the elements that he would need to make this steel gate, or should we say a wall. And he sealed them between the mountains and the Caucasus and right. locked them away for some centuries. And so these were not just Gog, Magog, but they were like other tribes along with them. You know, the Alemanni, you know, the people who became what we call now the Indo-Europeans. These, their ancestors, a lot of them were locked away behind this wall that Alexander the Great had put up. And according to some of the accounts that I also read, they start actually coming out of the wall some centuries later, and that's when the seeds of the melanated civilization began.
Right.
They were coming out, you know, basically down into what at that time was the civilized world, which was all melanated civilization.
Exactly. And that's mm-hmm. when they started trying to, they would be considered like maybe the they would be considered like the wildlings, or they were the White Walkers, if you will, in Game of Thrones.
Well, exactly. You can make that comparison.
Yeah.
Because the behavior that they were displaying, according to the records, that's what they were doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were savage.
Raiding, pillaging, sacrificing, rape, stealing, foraging of food, since they weren't farmers. They had no farming skills whatsoever. Much every crime against humanity that you can think of, they were committing on a regular basis.
Exactly. And that was their way of life.
Exactly. And so this is when they were pretty much living in, while they were confined in that area, they were living in the caves.
Yes, sir.
Correct? Yeah.
Yes, sir.
So we're
and
talking to
not
you.
Only that, I have a clip from a rabbi who basically goes into that. And they have a film where they went through the Caucasus Mountains, and he shows the caves. He shows what the dwelling places were. You know, so now this is not, you know, something that's, you know, make-believe. This actually happened and actually occurred because the relics are still there.
Yes.
To this day.
Yes. Yes, they are. Okay, so let me ask you, what do you think, or what is the time period, since we're talking timelines now? So, okay. They stay in. They stay trapped behind this wall for centuries.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what time they start out behind these walls, and then they start going to melanate civilized society? What is the timeline between that and them actually integrating to, or maybe even conquering some of these societies and taking them over for them as their own? What time?
Okay. Well, you have some accounts. Of course, if you research Alexander, you understand that, you know, he passed away in 300 BC. So
300 BC.
So you understand that around that time frame is when, you know, they were basically sealed off behind the wall in the Caucasus. So I've also read around 500, you know, A.D., they start coming out, and you start seeing some of them inhabiting, say, what is now Scandinavia, Norway, Finland, those areas, those regions, and they start gradually, you know, migrating into Europe. So time frame would be right around, say, 300 BC to 500 AD. because this is the accounts that is also reported as what they call the barbarian invasions. So when you look at the time frame about the barbarian invasions, then you understand that, it was around, the 4th, 5th century A.D. is when they start basically coming through Europe and pillaging and doing the same things that they were, customers doing the same things that they got sealed away for. They start doing it again.
They started doing it again. Exactly.
And now you understand, how a lot of the melanated civilizations, let's say in Europe or in, let's say, the northern regions, in Scotland, Wales, England, Ireland, all of these areas at one time was inhabited by melanated people. And when they start coming in, they basically, attacked them. And some were ran out, some were slaughtered. And they just moved into, after, they did their thing, they just moved in and made themselves at home.
Yeah.
And I had a discussion with a gentleman. I was basically, he was like, man, they came down and they did all these kinds of stuff. I said, okay, well, if that is even remotely true, show me something in Hyperborea, Siberia, where they are historically known to inhabit. Show me these castles or these kingdoms and these caves that they live in. Where are they? It's common sense. Then if you don't have any there, then how all of a sudden came about this technology and this knowledge?
And they're building castles and bridges and all this other stuff. Yeah.
All of this stuff already existed,
right?
Exactly. And then them usurping some of the nations. Of course, they subjugated the people, and had them doing the work as well. Yes. And then like they've done here, they came here with our ancestors, and they got shown how to farm and how to fish and how to hunt. And so now they are the masters of these things now. Saying? So it's like same thing that happened here.
Same thing happened there. Same thing happened in Greece. Mm-hmm. Same thing happened in all these ancient parts. And the thing is also, another thing about that is they also started breeding and mixing in with those melanated Europeans and gaining, let's just say, access to the throne by blood.
By bloodline. What they were doing, basically, if you look at, say, the Fen Moors, the M-O-H-R Moors, what they were doing, and you got to understand, too, is during the Byzantine Empire, the Byzantine Empire started around 300 B.C., so, same time frames that they were coming out. So going to the historical accounts that I read, they were sending, some at a time to go in, infiltrate, and what I read that's, kind of stunned me was one of their traditions. Let's say the Scavians or the Huns, they would send their women ahead in the mix with the men. Now she's pregnant, they got kids. Now here come mom and daddy and brother and cousin and uncle and all them coming. So now, I said and thought about, say, okay, now see, this happened, just hypothetically, and you have this person this woman that you basically took in, now you done got a doctor up, she got kids, and she telling you that her people are coming and, they're going to be moving in. And a lot of the times that the people who were basically intermixing, they were nobles. They were blue bloods. They were people of status and stature.
Yes.
They owned property. And so now you have somebody that's basically none mixed into your bloodline, and they got family. And one thing that the other side of the coin with the Moors, should I say, are those that came from Arabia, that came into Northern Africa and mixed with the barbers, and then basically came and conquered the southern part. See, you have the M-H-O-R Moors in Northern Europe. You have the M-O-O-R Moors in Southern Europe.
And Southern,
not to be, be confused, because they are two sets of people. One, M-O-H-R Moors are actually the aboriginal indigenous people of the land of Europe.
Exactly.
The M-O-O-R Moors, they were actually those who basically through conquest took over, you know, what is now Portugal, Iberia Peninsula, Spain. Those were their strongholds. You know, so now you have that faction going on. And what they did is they also basically, according to history in the 9th century A.D. or Anno Domini, they went and start taking the Slavs and basically, you know, basically taking them into servitude. These Moors start sleeping with some of the women, cleaning them up, you know, washing them up and everything.
Right.
And start sleeping in, and putting them in the harems and having kids out there. So now if you got a, if you're a Moor of stature and status and you got a harem of, say, 20 women, and each one of them have a kid, and all of them are, you know, basically biracial, and you're not giving them, you know, any privilege or, you know, or they don't see that they're going to have a way to, you know, take over the kingdom, or, you know, we get, they feel like, hey, I'm the son of, or I'm the daughter of this monarch, you know, I should get something, you know. So what was going on was they basically sided up, you know, with and their other half of their family, you know, like, hey, well, you know, that's yours, you know, we need to get that. And so that's how they started taking over these kingdoms.
Exactly.
You know, so it actually backfired because, you know, by them intermixing, the ones they were intermixing with now took control.
They had an agenda from the beginning. People, let me be clear here. For as long as I've been reading about so-called Caucasians, and we only call them Caucasians because they came out of those Caucasus mountains back
then.
They're not really Caucasians, if you will. But
no,
they have been practicing sex espionage for as long as I've been reading about them. Like when you say they send their women ahead first, okay? That is sex espionage. That is basically send the women ahead first to seduce the men, okay, get pregnant by these men, and then now the families move in. That is to gain a stronghold. Think today about how celebrities and pro athletes are seduced by white women. And what do those brothers do? They take care of those families, their entire family.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same difference. Okay, sparrows,
it is.
Swallows, and ravens do exist. No different than white men basically seducing Negro women in the 1800s, 1900s, all right, early 1900s, and having children with them in order to get their land. Those men, it wasn't the average Joe who did this. Those men were trained sexuality, and they were called, and so are ravens.
Exactly.
That's what they have heterosexual ravens. They have homosexual and bisexual. Well, if you're bisexual, you're homosexual anyway. You get the point. Ravens.
Right.
Okay, so, and what Reggie is talking about, the Moors, M-O-H-R, and M-O-R, the Moors, the indigenous Europeans, they are totally different. Look, Moors that you guys claim that did this and that, all right, they didn't invent classical music. They didn't have a classical era. They didn't have any of these things. They are two entirely different people. Entirely different people. All together.
Exactly.
All together.
Exactly.
Hey, real quick, Randy, we'll get right back to you. But 302 is on the line, so let's holler at 302. You're on the
record. I mean, it happened. I'm not saying it didn't happen, but it didn't happen in the magnitude that they want you to believe.
No, one of the pictures.
Hey. 302.
Send me your report.
302.
Hello.
What's up? What's up, bro? Hello.
Oh, man, my bad, Gabe. I'm over here eating, listening to
it's
you, man.
It's all good.
My fault, man.
Oh, you're good.
This is terrible, man. Hey, man, I just wanted to say, look, you guys are doing a great job. Keep up the great work, Medicine Man. This is Terrence from Facebook. We chatted a few times.
Right.
Gabe, we chatted a few times, man. Look,
yes, sir.
You guys are doing an excellent, excellent job, man. Keep up the great work. Our people are in a big, big paradigm shift, and the information that y'all are giving out is only helping our people. So just keep up the great work.
I appreciate it.
I do too. I hope it's a wake up.
Yes, because we really need to wake up.
We really got to wake up, but, you know, it's going to take time, you know, because by nature, we're a stubborn people. So Over time, as things keep being drilled into our head, I think it'll eventually sink in. But I was just enjoying the lecture, man. I was eating. I'm sorry if I sound like I got food in my mouth.
Oh, no, no. But, it's all good, bro. It's all good.
But,
it's all good, man.
But yeah,
I appreciate you.
Yeah, but yeah, Reggie and Gabe, man, I check you guys out almost every day on Facebook. I can't really respond right now because I'm in Facebook jail again.
Uh-oh.
But,
we know how that goes.
Again, bro.
Yeah, they got
they
me
got
again, man.
Again.
I'll be free next Wednesday. So, I just want to give my gratitude to both of y'all, man, because y'all really, really helped me a lot with building my family tree and figuring out where I come from and things like that, man.
Mm-hmm.
So just keep up the great work, man. Y'all doing a
yes,
really,
sir.
Really good job.
All praises to the Most High.
Right on, bro.
Absolutely,
right on.
Man.
Right on. All right, bro. Peace. Hit
right,
me
man.
When you get out of jail.
Yeah. Hey, hit me up. Hit me up and let me know.
Yeah, I will.
Right
all
on.
Right.
Okay.
Right on. All right, real quick, Reggie, we got 928.
Yeah.
928, you're on the Rich Report. What's up? 928, what's up? Hey.
Are they there?
They're there, but I don't think they're on yet. Hey, we'll come back to you, 928. We're going to continue this discussion because, quite frankly, we need to have this discussion. And it is some, you tell me, you're giving some great, great information. Great information. Okay, so let me ask you, Reggie.
Mm-hmm.
How does the claim of thrones of Europe affect us here in America?
Well, the claim of thrones, and I'm glad you asked that question because I'm currently after my little hiatus, and I know I got a few people checking on me, and I appreciate the love, but sometimes I have to, you know, take a break, you know, to regroup, and I'm already in production for Game of Thrones. I mean, Claim of Thrones 2, and that's going to address
right.
some of what you just asked. Well, if we understand that we got to get, you know, this is one facet that affects us is religion, and if we understand that all religions that we know to this day actually stem from Europe. And so when you understand that, say, in the Byzantine era, they were practicing Christianity. Constantine, which was a melanated man,
yes.
and all of his bishops, you know.
Yes.
And this actually, you know, spilled over here. Now, not to give too much away for the part two, but I wanted to touch on the connection. Because, you know, we got a lot of people who, you know, are adamant about the Bible and it says this and it says that, and that's the word of God. And I'm like, look, I'm not trying to, you know, bust nobody's bubble or anybody's dreams or anything, but I just don't look at it that way. I was told when I was a shorty, when my grandmama, she, you know, because she was an evangelist, and I was basically, you know, coattailing her everywhere she went, you know, I'm going with her. So I was well versed with the Bible. I mean, I could quote scriptures, I could throw them out at you, and everything, you know, because I heard it all the time, you know. But yeah,
right.
the thing about it was, what my grandmama told me, that was so profound. She said, "Don't throw that away. Don't throw your Bible away." She said, "Because that Bible that book is full of our history." And so I was like, you know, that kind of stuck with me. You know, I'm like, our history. And I'm looking at through the Bible, and I said, well, all these people don't look like us. All these illustrations in this Bible, that Jesus don't look like us. I'm like, you know, so they kind of, you know, threw me for a while until I started really doing the research. And according to the historical accounts, around 800 A.D., you had some of these Europeans come to America, and they brought religion with them.
Yes.
And they formed
right.
a colony called Calais. And Calais, they even got artifacts to basically confirm this, that they done did dating on and did all type of tests on it, and it's conclusive. That, oh, this these are real. So these people actually came here, you know. So this is around the time of Charlemagne, and so now
right.
we gotta, you know, take into account, like, okay, how does you know this Christianity thing get to America, you know? Because I was reading one of my favorite books. the natural and aboriginal history of Tennessee before the first settlements therein by white people in the year 1768, which is just 200 years before my brother was born. That's a year younger than me. I was, you know, so it was like, I'm like, well, wait a minute, we count the generations back from there. You know, so that lets you know that, you know, these things are a lot more recent than we are led to believe. And when I was reading it one of the passages in the book said that it went on, the author was saying that he had ran across an Indian and was asking him about, you know, the Bible. He said, well, we used to have a great book, and it was taken by the white man. And the Great Spirit, you know, was upset with them, and so they were basically punished because they allowed this book to be taken, and now it's being manipulated. You know, so right. I don't know if this great book that they're speaking about was in reference to the historical records, you know, the genealogy, you know, because that's when you're looking at the Old Testament, that's all it is. It's a book. It's a chronological book of genealogy. You know, so
it's all it is.
When you're looking at it from a historical point of view, and that's why I tell people, I look at the Bible as a history book.
Yep.
You know, I bypass all of the fluff and all that. I'm looking at the historical accounts, things that I can prove, things that I can see that's tangible. And once I find that, I'm like, oh, okay, that's one more thing that this Bible basically speaks of. And then I'm, you know, say, Mama, like, Grandmama, you're right. Hey, this is a book about our history. So and a lot of that I kind of showed in Children of the Corn video.
Children of the Corn. Yep.
Yeah. So I went really deep into that so that people can understand that this Bible is not just a religion. It's not a religious thing. It never, you know, wasn't intention. They made it that way, you know,
right.
Because when it came here, one of the biggest weapons they had was the Bible. You know, when you understand how the Crusades went about and how, you know, they manipulated, like, okay, for instance, the New Testament. The New Testament are letters to these different nations basically telling them that we got to come over here and take this land. We got to go ahead and become a part of the covenant. So that's what it was all about. And so that's why, you know, it was 1452, the Pope didn't even know, he hadn't even read the New Testament. So what that tell you? So he's like, well, wait a minute. You know, if the Pope, who's supposed to be, you know, the head of the church, hadn't read it, you know, and didn't know, you know, didn't really know about it, wasn't versed about it, then how authentic is it? And then you understand who all put it together. So, you know, a lot of what we're dealing with now in America, it actually, a lot of it was rooted and brought here from Europe. And a lot of the, and I'm not talking to and people, when you automatically think of Europe, you think of pale-skinned people. No.
Right.
These were people that looked like us.
Exactly.
You know, they were melanated people.
They were a swarthy colored people.
A swarthy,
and
exactly.
All accounts, swarthy colored people means mud colored people. Okay, we were
exactly.
Copper people, which means our skin shines, people. It
shines.
There's a difference
exactly.
Between the two. Africans are considered
exactly.
Swarthy colored people, okay, or Ethiopians,
mm-hmm.
if you want to call them that. Your Greeks were considered swarthy colored. Your melanated Europeans were considered swarthy colored. We are copper colored. From South America,
exactly.
and Caribbean to Central and North America, on over to the Pacific Islands, actually, are considered
exactly.
copper colored people. So,
exactly.
you know, just
and you know,
just
you,
FYI.
You know what's, and you know what's funny about that, though? And I'm doing some more research. You know, I'm all around. You know, I go from one thing to another. I'm an airy, so it's like, you know, I'm a short attention span. I get on something, I get into it, and I see something else. I put that to the side. And I've been really trying to get more information on it. But when I did research on basically the anthropology and the archaeology, the earliest anthropology and archaeology of the Americas, it was like when they first was coming over here and, you know, basically doing all the tests and going there trying to find all of the relics and everything. They were, you know, basically writing and describing all this stuff. And what they were saying basically was that, you know, when they first come over and they start recording, you know, the accounts of the people and basically their way of life, their traditions, their customs, they were saying that they were Hebraic customs. But they didn't have, like, what they had. They didn't have that Bible. But they were living a Hebraic style, a lifestyle. You know, they even described some of the tribes have fringes on their garments. You know, so it's like, okay, this kind of goes back to when the first settlers came from Europe back in 800 AD, and they formed the Colony of Calais, like right around in Arizona, New Mexico region, and the artifacts that they confirmed it. So now you understand, okay, how this ideology came into being here, well, one way that it did, and that's one of the earliest that I've come across, showing how Christianity or this belief in Christianity was brought here. And now when you're looking at how it is today, how who are the most profound, most religious people is our people.
Yeah.
It's like we understand that we have a spirit inside of us, all of us do. That's different than other people. And I just see it, it's just like, when I'm around us, you can feel it, it's hard to explain, but when I'm around others, I don't feel it, and so it's like, okay, and we can relate to each other more, on a spiritual plane. And
right.
These things, are inherent, that's been basically passed down genetically, from our ancestors. And so now you got to, as I'm looking at all of this, I'm like, okay, we always believed in a great spirit. We always believed in the Most High, a higher being, the creator of the creators. So we always believed this. And this is all throughout history. As I'm reading all of the early historical accounts of the indigenous people that they came across when they came here and how they described them. Like, for instance, a lot of the mounds were ceremonial platforms, that they did, their worship, that they did their sacrifices and their offering and whatnot. And just to jump on another subject real quick, in 1317, it was recorded in historical accounts that the people of Anahuac, which is now Mexico, they only offered flowers and fruits to the divinity. So now you got to understand that around the 13th century is when the Mongol Tartars invaded, and basically they brought, their belief of sacrifice and whatnot to the Americas. Prior to that, this wasn't a thing. So as I'm looking at it, and researching it, it's just fascinating, how, you can kind of stop putting the pieces together, because it's just a big puzzle. And now I got another piece to put here. Oh, that makes sense. Oh, this goes with that. So I'm like, wow, and that's really what we have to do, is basically, re-engineer, saying what's been engineered.
True. And also, okay, they pretty much gave us the religion, but the religious practices in terms of catching the Holy Ghost and getting up and dancing and shouting, those are our engine spiritual practices anyway. I know a few indigenous Europeans, and they would say that was beneath them. They didn't do stuff like that. I know a few African historians who say the same thing. They didn't celebrate when they, religion in the way that we did at all. And some were even envious of our practice. And now they emulate it. Of course, they emulate it through Caucasians, because Caucasians brought that practice along. So when you see these, particularly these Southern Baptist preachers, and they're doing stuff from catching the Holy Ghost, and they still have their practices. They're having snakes bite them and stuff like this to catch the spirit. They're combining their practices and our practices, because in Caucasus, they didn't catch the Holy Spirit. They didn't do that stuff either before. A lot of times their celebration involves sacrifice, chopping of arms, heads, all this other stuff. So it is what it is. Hey, real quick, we got 727 on. 727, you're on the Rich Report. What's up?
Halito.
How you doing, Joy?
How you know this is Joy?
Oh, come on. You know anywhere, you copper cougar.
You know your voice.
Thank you. Look, I'm moving on Indian time tonight, okay?
I heard that.
I almost forgot the show. I was outside sweeping the yard,
Whoa.
Sweeping the house.
You said sleep in the yard?
In the yard?
I was outside sweeping the leaves. The leaves were falling, and I wanted to create, you know. And then I'm supposed to be doing something else. I caught some of the shows. Really powerful. Good evening, Reggie.
Good evening.
I'm loving it, Medicine Man. You're on it.
Well, you know, I guess the cat's out the bag now. For a while, they didn't about they thought it was two different people. No, Medicine Man
You're doing a great job. I love your videos. I watch them. I enjoy them.
I appreciate
them.
That.
Yes, and I see, like, everybody's resonating on what they got to be doing, and I really love that, you know?
Right on.
And,
exactly.
I appreciate what you're doing. But I just want to hit on one thing. I don't want to hold you guys up because you're into some really good, deep conversation over there. But I was thinking, because the Algonquin, the first Bible in America was written in Algonquin language, right?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Do you know it was the only Bible in America?
For 100 years. Yes, ma'am.
So I'm thinking they never really had a Bible. Not really. Not the one that we have over here.
I believe that
was a brand new version that we already had. I think they got it from us, because I've been doing a lot of researching on my grandfather. My great-great-great-grandfather was Moses Malachi, right? And he was Moses Malachi the Third, right? And Moses means Moshe in English.
Exactly.
Right.
Moshe in Spanish, Moses in English. So he was born in 1706. Now, I traced him all the way in the Carolinas to 1706, right? And the only, how could you be a Moses Malachi the Third if you're from Africa?
Right. Well, you know, you have to have a first and a second, you know, so
right.
If you're not African, how is he African?
He was the third. And I thought maybe, you know, some black people were naming themselves after biblical names and stuff. But I'm thinking, no, after doing more research, I started to find that some of these things in the Bible are directly related to my family. And it's kind of strange because my father passed away and I did his funeral, blah, blah, in Carolina. And my auntie came over to me like she had a secret. You know, she said, you know, we're very ancient people, right? And walked away. I said, wow. She didn't say nothing else. And that's all I needed to hear from her, because she never really talks to me because she's real bourgeois, right?
Right.
So when she said that, I started thinking, oh, my God, she said that to me. Because our name is Malachi, right?
Uh-huh.
And the Malachis were very, very tall people in Peru. And they were also of the Moshe kingdom, because a lot of our people came north from the south. We weren't always in the north. A lot of us were in kingdoms in the south. So when I see the Moshe, and they are very tall, and they're in the Bible. The Malachis are in the Bible. They're talking about these Malachis now, not no 100, 300, 3,000 years ago.
Right.
So some of our families are in those books right now, not from one, you know, not from a long, long time ago.
Well, let me
trip you out. It dawned on me when I heard you talking about that.
Yeah, but let me trip you out with this, and you know, let's use your critical thinking and common sense. If they started the colony of Jamestown in prior to they starting in 1607, in 1606, King James gave out two patents to Plymouth and the London Company. And it's also, I have a book with a map in it, and it has charts, and it shows King James came over here in 1603.
Exactly.
So I'm starting thinking. I'm like, if he came over here in 1603, you know, that's 4 years before, you know, he had Jamestown became what it is. Of course, it's named after him. But 4 years prior to that, he was here. So that led me to thinking, who did he talk to? And what information did he get? Because 8 years later, 1611, he comes out with the King James Version. You see what I'm saying?
Well,
and so
it was
like, what kind of information, what records did he take over? And, you know, now gotta keep in mind the 1611 version of King James Bible also had the Apocrypha. And so it actually had 80 books, which were now, I think it's 66 now. You know, so they took out a lot of that. So where did all that information come from?
A lot of stuff out
that they took out
from us. They were
exactly.
just taking stuff just like the
exactly.
Scottish and the Scottish Rites and the Masons, and all of those people were hanging out with our shamans, you know, and learning things
mm-hmm.
from our people. And
mm-hmm.
then they would take
the, that would be the original
yeah,
Scott,
they asked
the
us,
original
what is
Celt
this and what is that? And
in Britain.
And next thing you know, they're in Europe with a new religion, a new
exactly.
Masonic. And people
mm-hmm.
are afraid of the Masonic order, which I come from a family of Masons, and a lot of people are afraid of Masonic orders, but we were already pyramid builders. We were already
yeah.
Masons. So
already,
for us to be afraid of our own culture, sometimes it kind of saddens me, because and we got to know that if it's up, they're going to turn it upside down. So
well, that's
right.
because they whitewashed it, though. That's the reason why.
Exactly.
They taught you,
to make us afraid of it.
Yeah, to make us afraid of it. So that's
mm-hmm.
what they do. That's what they. Hey, hold tight, Joy. I got 267. 267. You're on the Rich Report. What's up?
So I don't know if you're talking to me. And if I'm in.
Yes, I am.
An accident. Hi.
Oh, you're.
Red
Janet.
What's going on, Janet?
Janet, hey, how's it going?
I'm okay. This was meant to be. I swear it was an accident.
I know that voice.
Oh, my God. But listen, Reggie, I'm in Philadelphia, the home of the second White House, President's House.
Uh-huh.
This is a commonwealth because
uh-huh.
the Lenape chief did not sell the land. So the Pennsylvania has no deed. Now, I'm sharing that because I think, oh, and the show is wonderful. It's just absolute. I've learned a lot. It's absolutely wonderful. My concern, however, is with all of this work that we're doing, we still have our people who are indigenous, aboriginal on the land. And when we talk about it, they compare themselves to those on the res.
Uh-uh.
We're not the same people.
No.
We,
no.
I believe, are being totally ignored as a people. And I guess, I don't know what I'm asking.
I see where you're going with it, though.
I don't know what I'm asking, except that people need to understand the fact, and you've been sharing it, and you're doing the work, that we were here first. We are
yeah.
the original.
Mm-hmm.
But people don't get it because of the brainwashing, the media, politics, all of those things that keep our people from knowing. We need to be on our game with regards to our legal responsibilities to our people.
Uh-huh.
Agree.
I also think we need to be fighting to get that doggone slave document, which I'm sick of hearing. People who look like us continue to uphold and praise is that Constitution. That
right.
keeps us in the hole that we're in. And we're
it
not
really
fighting.
Does.
Good point.
Okay,
well, legally, we
I
have the right to govern ourselves, Janet.
Yep.
We have legal right to govern ourselves. We don't need their
yep.
approval.
The UN, indigenous people, rights of the indigenous people.
Exactly. We don't need their proof or their opinion.
Cause yeah.
That's like asking
except,
a thief to give you what
okay,
he took
okay,
and
okay.
give it back.
Except
he ain't giving it back.
The thing, the trick they made was to get us to respect their laws, which aren't real laws.
All right. So. But when it comes to their laws that are totally against us, written on paper, why do you think the prisons are filled up?
Mm-hmm.
It's serious. It ain't that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that light. We got most of our
they
people
should not have their hands on
us. Re-enslaved based on the Constitution. Now we're losing our land because we're really not citizens of this land. So when they come with their laws, where are we? Where are we?
We're indigenous.
What are we doing?
We don't need to be no.
Citizens. Well, we adhere to
whatever.
We adhere to
what
their laws.
What are
that's
we part doing? Reggie, are you understanding what I'm saying?
I'm understanding. I see what you're saying. You know, strength
I get
is in numbers.
Saying too. Yeah.
Strength is in numbers. And that's the thing that we're battling right now. It's like, you know, we're a small community compared to the whole. And we have, just like in, you know, in all the research and all the research, all the tribes that lived here, you know, from antiquity, they didn't get along. And today, we don't get along. You know, so it's right. Basically, you know, a situation now where I just come to a conclusion like, well, I'm going to roll with who rolled, walking on the same side of the road with me. We roll together. You know, if you ain't on the same road with me, then I'll let you go your way, I'll go mine. And we got to get more like-minded people, you know, to get, you know, strength in our numbers so that we can make a difference.
Yeah, we could all sign something together because there's power in numbers. We could all sign together and saying that we want to be one tribe, all of us, and all of us put our name down, and boom.
Yeah,
that's
all
we have
game,
to be, power in numbers.
It's all of it. That's the
and then we present ourselves as one.
Exactly. One of the reasons they got the land is because they broke us down from our tribes and our nations and tribes and confederacies and turned us into individual Negroes. That's one of the reasons why we gave it the land to begin with. So because they broke us down in numbers and census, you know, it is what it is. Hey, real quick, 240, you guys hang on. 240, you're on the Rich Report. What's up?
OCO, everyone. It's Wind Walker.
OCO,
Wind Walker. Hey, what's happening, Wind?
Not to be confused.
Yeah. It's good to be here. And it's time for them to go.
Right on.
It's time for them to go. They know it.
We have to go.
Yeah.
Hey, real quick, Wind Walker. We got about 8 minutes, 8 minutes, 30 seconds. So it's only an hour and a half tonight. But we'll go back to the 2 hour format and do it up tonight. So speak your piece, brother.
Okay. Well, they're talking about this 400-year anniversary, okay, about when allegedly the first slave, they say, from Africa was brought to Jamestown, okay? Well, nobody's talking about it is, because that same time frame, the early 1600s going in like 1620, the Dutch were at war with the Waikamas of what's now called Waikamico County, Maryland, Eastern Shore, okay? I have indigenous roots there. Okay, and that was a slave ship that brought those people in, the indigenous people in. They were prisoners of war. Okay, no one is talking about that. And then the next time, okay, a big problem. Okay, with the people, they're all waking up. Okay, these pimps in the pulpits that are in the churches. Okay, they are all in bed with the Freemasons who are in bed with their masters. Okay, still.
Exactly.
All right. And the next time somebody says black, you put it to them like this, okay? What would the Great Spirit call me? Would the Great Spirit call me black? Okay, put it out there like that, okay? Put it out like that to any and everybody.
Right.
But they know that we are indigenous, okay? The courts, they know this, because when I've been in the court, okay. And I, you know, the judge asked me. I was wearing my choker. He said, "That's a nice, interesting bolo. Where'd you get it?" I told him, "Said I'm indigenous, Cherokee Kiowa, indigenous American." And he bowed because he had to. We are the ancient ones. We are the ancient royal families of the Americans of the world. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
And my tribe, we have the documents of my tribe, so we have the roles also. So if anyone is interested, they can follow
what
up.
What about Wind Walker? What about?
Yeah, hey Janet.
What about all of a whole bunch of us have no papers, and those
no worries,
with papers?
Okay.
Listen, those with papers have an attitude with those of us who don't have papers, and I've been in their presence. You understand what I'm saying? Nobody can tell us who we are. So about all of those? Well, a whole bunch of us don't have papers. I don't have papers.
Well,
I got a birth record.
My tribe, okay?
What?
We have the documents. We had the rolls, okay? Documents came from the Department of Interior, which used to be the Department of War, okay? It came from the National Archives, and it came from the Library of Congress, okay? And the National Archives has our artifacts of my tribe, Cherokee Kiowa, the King George colonies, okay, which was also called the Cherokee Nation / State / Georgia Nation / State, which consisted of North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, Georgia, Tennessee, Mississippi, and Alabama. We had these documents.
Why do you say King George? King George colonies, okay?
Because in 1650, King George the First, he sent his official envoys over to the Cherokee Nation because they knew that we had the ancient blood, which is O-type blood, okay? It's the blood of the pharaohs. It's a cleansing blood. It can destroy any illness out here. They were dying off from the Black Plague, okay, even the royal families in Europe. So they had to intermarry into our royal families, just like this guy called himself Prince Harry married Meghan Markle because her mother is indigenous.
Oh, yeah.
And see, they're setting up indigenous ties to this land here. And also let them know,
yeah,
we are ecologically tied to this land, which means we are part of the ecosystem. We are the golden fleece.
Exactly.
True that.
We are
King
the
George,
golden
fleece. You mentioned King George.
Real quick, guys. I got 928.
King George is in the Carolinas.
You got a quick 928?
Well, my family was on this kind of reservation type thing with King George, and the King of England gave it to him, and all of my people is on that land still today.
Okay.
And there's
a sign
out front that said POW.
Go ahead.
Real quick, I want to wrap it up with Reggie. Real quick, Reggie, you got any final thoughts on the subject? We'll do another show, bro.
Yeah, we're going to have to do this. We're going to have to do a part two.
No doubt.
Any final thoughts? Well, just to touch on Wim Walker, what he said, I did some research as well on that 1620 ordeal, what they're saying that, well, those people that were brought over here, it's funny because then in 1620, they show on the white slaves coming over here. You know, so it's like, okay, so now we have to really put everything in its proper perspective because you can't have it both ways. You know what I'm saying? So how could you bring Africans over here? Then you got records showing that you were bringing Europeans in here, you know, in the 1620s.
They are the Africans.
They were in North Africa
for over 300 years as slaves
in
to
North,
the Moors.
In North Carolina, the first slaves were also white slaves.
Exactly.
They're the African Americans.
That's what the Civil War was about. The second Civil War was about to free the white slaves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And because the North was scared that they were going to come up there and enslave them.
Well, that money had a lot to play into it in terms of the Civil War. The South had all the resources, particularly cotton.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you're right. You're right about that. Okay, we got about 2 minutes left. Reggie, I want to thank you so much for coming on with me tonight. Lee, you really dropped it. And I hope for a lot of people that got what Reggie is saying here, historically speaking, because you need to learn this stuff. Because the people who run this country and world use this information against you all the time. All right?
Exactly.
They do it through education, they do it through religion, they do it through a number of ways, obviously TV, media. And we need to learn this so that you can refute the claims that are, you know, that you are inferior, that you come from Africa, that you came here to be somebody's pet. So that's unacceptable to me. I've never really fully accepted that. So again, bro, I want to thank you for coming on. Thank everybody who called in, and I really appreciate you guys. And we will do this again. All right. So until next week, I know not what I'm going to talk about next week. I know not what I'm going to talk about, people. But whatever it is, it's going to be fun. So with that, you know
it. Thank you, Gabe. Yes, okay.
Peace.
Oh no. So Gabe, give Reg my number, man.